So I've heard there may be some snow on its way. Did you hear that too? 1 inch, 3 inches. This Cleveland boy isn't scared by that. But I will say, with the winter weather coming, I do remember somewhat wistfully my days as a rabbinic student. Because as you may know, I've shared previously, my student pulpit as a rabbi was at the Bahamas Jewish congregation in Nassau, Bahamas. Once a month for about 2 years, I flew down a weekend to lead services, to teach classes, to lead religious school, to fly back to New York City. I don't think your student pulpits were quite as exotic as that, sadly.
Long Island.
But the synagogue, now the congregation was a fascinating congregation. It was a mix of expat Americans and expat Europeans, usually who were there working either for the banks or the hotels, and a handful of native Bahamians who were studying towards conversion. The synagogue itself wasn't actually much to look at. It was a storefront in an outdoor strip mall that one of the congregants owned. And so it was the storefront between a sporting goods store and a Domino's Pizza. Someone had taken a portable storage closet and turned it into an ark for the Torah scroll. Someone had strung a hanging lamp to be the Ner Tamid. There was a reading table in front to lead services from. But I'll tell you, when the community gathered, there was a real sense of connection for religious school or for Shabbat or high holiday services. I actually even officiated at the first bar mitzvah in the Bahamas in 30 years. Brent Jaffe, who must be, I don't know how old he is now, became bar mitzvah with me. So it may have been a storefront, but for that community, it was their sacred space. Our Torah portion this week actually talks a lot about sacred space. The portion's called Truma, and it contains the building instructions for the Mishkan. It's like the world's first IKEA catalog, right? It's the portable take-apart sanctuary the Israelites would travel with in the wilderness. Mishkan, which is translated into English usually as tabernacle, which doesn't usually help people understand what a Mishkan is, right? But it's a place where God would dwell. The line in the text is, Asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. Make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. Shachanti, shochen. Mikdash is a place, kodesh, a place where holiness abides. Mishkan, a place to dwell in the midst of or near to the people. And in great, great detail, we get the specifics of this building project. Wall sockets, enclosures, all of the furnishing, some of which we still have vestiges of today, right? We read about an ark to hold the Ten Commandments. There's our ark. We read about a lampstand, the menorah, like the eternal light up there, right? We read about the altar for sacrifices, like, oh, well, thankfully that's not part of modern synagogue architecture, but the fire on that altar was to be perpetual, never to go out, like our Ner Tamid. And other elements, the tables, the washstand, other altars as well. Actually, if you want to see what the Mishkan may have looked like, you can Google tabernacle or Mishkan. There are lots of drawings. You can even buy a little model make your own Mishkan kit. That's true. And someone out in the Israeli desert in Timna built this. We'll put the slide up, please. Are they listening? But there we go. So here is a schematic of it. You see the large square structure up front is the altar. The round is the laver, the wash basin. And then there's an interior structure to the outside enclosure that has the lampstand, the table of bread, the incense altar, and then in the back, the Ark of the Covenant itself. So they took this and they built a real live one that looks like this, a model size one out in the middle of the desert, following the directions, right? Next slide. You can see that they included the courtyard, the altar, the laver, the holy place, the courtyard fence and everything. Next one, next slide. They built a wash basin, and where that little boy is walking up the ramp, that's actually the altar that you would sacrifice on. You can see the four horns on that. One more. And here on the inside, they had mannequins wearing the priestly clothes with the menorah and the table and the parochet, the curtain, and one more. And here in the back of it is, they made an Ark of the Covenant. I don't think that's the one Steven Spielberg used, but close, right? Not a bad idea. Interesting to see in the middle of the desert in Israel to go and see what the Mishkan is like. That was the Israelites' first attempt at building sacred space. That later was replicated to some extent in the Great Temple in Jerusalem, and then over centuries in synagogues around the world. Who here has been to a synagogue or a temple outside of TBS? How about outside of the DMV? Outside of Virginia? Outside of the United States? Ooh, you good travelers. Where have you been? Where's the most exotic place you've been to a temple? Hong Kong. Where else? Where? I can't even say that. Namibia. Okay. Where else? India. In Mbali. Mali. St. Thomas. Lots of really creative. So they all have the same elements, like in the Mishkan itself, but they each are special and unique to that particular place. Among the most unique synagogues that I've been in, I think we have the next slide, is the Great Synagogue in Florence, Italy, built in the late 1800s. Very impressive dome, as you can see, a triple archway, horseshoe arched entrances. Next slide. With marble flooring, inlaid marble floor, rich mosaics, gold plating, stained glass. Really a beautiful place to pray. One other place, also fascinating, and I don't have a photo of it, Congregation Beth Am in Buffalo Grove, Illinois. Not exactly what you would think of as the most exotic place. They've since moved from this, but they at one point had bought a Home Depot, big box store, right? And transformed it on the inside in the most fascinating way. Inside, it was set up like a little village. You would walk in and there was a path. And like Hollywood fake storefronts, they were different sections. You walked in one storefront, one door, and that led to the religious school wing. And you walked in another door off of another path, and it led to the administrative offices, or to the social hall, or to the sanctuary. With dropped ceilings and these false facades, they turned this big box Home Depot into a village, into their community, right? You'd never know there was a Wendy's next door, right? Because it was their sacred space. Now, even as the Torah tells us all of these details and specifics, it also hints to us that the building itself is not actually the most important part. Because the text does not say, Vishachanti bitocho, that I will dwell in it, in the Mishkan that you will build. The text says, Vishachanti bitocham, which means I will dwell among them. It's not, I'm gonna dwell in this building you're gonna build. I'm going to use that as a place to dwell among them, among the Israelites. The building is important, but the community is more important. And Rabbi Lisa Goldstein points out the place for the Mikdash, for the sanctuary, the place of holiness is among the people. Having a central location can help us cultivate holiness together, but the important part is the together part, not the specific building. As magnificent as some synagogue structures are, or as simple as the Bahamas Jewish congregation, the important part is the together part. Sacred space can be anywhere. An outdoor sanctuary at summer camp, a Hillel building on campus. It's not the location, it's the community. The search for sanctity is a communal activity. Finding holiness happens best when it is done in a group. Vishochanti bitocham, among them, striving for holiness together. And there's one more layer, one other piece to Torah that I want to teach you here, because bitocham can mean among them or in their midst, where God will be found, where we find holiness. But bitocham can also mean not among them, but inside them. Inside them, meaning it's an internal thing. Make me a sanctuary, says God, and I will dwell in you. It's not about an external place, it's about an internal sense of presence. So we might ask, how do we go about creating that sacred space within us? How do we shape a place for the divine to dwell? Now, for some of us, this is an easy thing to think about. We're in tune to that. For many of us, this can be a little challenging or a little unusual, but I want to take a brief moment for a little bit of internal construction work, some reflection and interior work. So everyone sit up straight for just a minute. Put your feet down towards the floor. Take a breath in and release. And another one in, down to your knees, and release. And a breath all the way filling you up down to your toes, and release. You can keep doing the breathing on your own, but center yourself for a moment. Close your eyes if you want. The Israelites built the tabernacle by bringing gifts, gold, silver, yarn, whatever it was. And from their gifts and their offerings, they created a space for holiness. I'll ask you to reflect for a moment or two. What gifts do you have? What skills or talents? What values and beliefs? What makes you you? And how can you use that to bring you closer to holiness? How do you use your divine gifts? How do you find God present within you? So we'll sit for a moment, hearts open, breathing the universe in and out, reflecting on how we build that sanctuary for God inside. Synagogues come in all different shapes and sizes. Synagogues are large and small, grand and simple. When we build a mishkan in our hearts, we create entrances of justice and compassion. We adorn it with mosaics of kindness and stained glass of fairness. We inlay in its foundation peace and love. There is sacred space around us. There's sacred space within us. And with the gifts that they brought, the Israelites built a place for holiness in their lives. With our skills and our talents, our gifts and our values, may we create this sacred community, and may we find within ourselves a place for holiness to dwell. Shabbat Shalom.